everyone, and welcome to a brand new Retro Raw rundown. We are a little bit late, but that is partially Sondra's fault and partially my fault, because Sondra thought that Raw Thursday, meant that we had like a week off, and she messaged me being like, oh, we don't need to do Retro Raw this week, we've got like 10 days, and I was like, oh, cool. And then in my head I was going, there's something I'm forgetting. And then Royal Rumble Raw came into my head, and I was like, ah, I need to tell Sondra about that. So
yeah, I forgot that Raw Thursday was the 13th and not, like, the next episode, because we'd been talking about Thursday, Raw Thursday, so I was like, great, it aired on a Thursday. That's awesome. So I kind of dropped the ball on that one, sorry.
So can I tell you the story of Royal Rumble Raw?
Please do, because I want to know why this happened and, you know, why this was how I spent an hour and a half last night instead of watching Chikara.
Okay, so originally what would happen is Raw would air for an hour between 9 and 10. Nitro would air between 9 and 11. So what was happening was a lot of people would watch Raw, and then when Raw is finished, like, it's like the best lead-in for Nitro ever. Because you're like, I've just watched an hour of WWF, and now I can go and watch like the good hour of WCW. So they were like sending viewers, unbeknownst. So the Raw that we watched 2 weeks ago, the one the night after the Royal Rumble, remember that was like a great show?
Yeah, that one was fantastic.
Tanked in the ratings. Absolutely.
Did it really?
Because it set up Nitro. Because everybody was so excited when they watched that show that they pretty much just went and watched Nitro straight away. So like, it ended up helping Nitro rather than helping WWF. So USA Network at this point are saying, right, we want to do a two-hour show. We want to do 9 to 11. We want to stop sending everybody to TNT. This is what we want to do.
So it tanked in the ratings because, what, like people switched over during an ad break or something? Because WWF was good, so they watched WCW?
I guess, I don't mean it like tanked. I mean it basically, like, so they say Raw had a 2.3, right? I don't know the exact ratings. But what would happen is, so many people would go over and watch the second hour of Nitro off of Raw that Nitro's ratings just went up and up and up,
thanks to
the viewers of Raw. So the gap was a lot bigger than it would have been had it just been, you know, head to head. So the plan was made to start doing Raw as 2 hours, starting on the 17th of February, which is the night after the Final Four. And then they booked the Manhattan Center for the 24th of February, and that was kind of all good. The original plan for this show that we are going to talk about today, it was going to be Royal Rumble Raw. It was going to be a one-hour special, and it was just going to be the airing of the entire 1997 Royal Rumble match.
Mm-hmm. I remember you telling me that, I think, last week.
Yeah, the reason for that is because USA Network, if anybody remembers, is where the original Royal Rumble aired in 1988.
Oh.
And that was the highest rated show that WWF ever had in USA Network. It did an 8.2 rating.
Wow.
So the idea was they could replicate that by having the Royal Rumble on the show, and then it was a very talked about Royal Rumble, lots of controversy, so people would tune in, right? That was the idea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense if you think that pay-per-view providers are going to be gracious and allow you to do that.
I'm so glad you hustled me on to my next point, Sandra, because WWF announced that they're going to show, because they did it last week, you know, we're going to show the whole Royal Rumble, and then like requests and viewers' choice were like, we have like an exclusivity protection in our pay-per-view deals, so you're not allowed to air the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. So instead, we get 30-second clips of the Royal Rumble, and they hadn't shot enough TV, so there was a house show in Toronto on the 31st of January, which ended up doing big business, so they just turned it into a Raw show. So that's kind of the story of Royal Rumble Raw.
Okay, so this was on the 31st of January that this was taped then?
Yeah.
Okay, that answers one of my questions for later.
Okay, so we're live from the Sky Dome. What did you think of the lighting on this, Rosandra?
It was definitely different. It felt kind of dark and house show-ish, which I kind of liked, actually. Just, like, it felt different. It definitely felt different. I liked the big red carpet, actually, most of all.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, like, you'll see with a lot of these Raws that go on in the next few months of, like, Raws would look different at points for where they were, you know, and that was quite cool to see.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you notice sets and lighting and ambiance, I guess, more than I do. Like, I notice ring rope color, and that's about it. a lot of the time. So, but mm-hmm. this one was noticeably different to me, even like the way it was set up, and I guess just the way they entered and the way the whole thing felt. It did feel much more like a house show or something than a regular episode of Raw, I guess.
But, you know, they did have, like, 26,000 people in the Sky Dome, which, you know, it's, like, less than half the size of the actual capacity, but still for a Raw that was just a house show at the time, didn't do too bad.
Yeah, and, I mean, if they would have advertised it as Raw, do you think that they would have been able to sell more tickets?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, they would have, right? Because that's, I mean, 25,000 for a Raw is impressive. Nowadays, anyway. But how many do you think they would have been able to sell?
You know, maybe like 35, maybe something like that. Because, I mean, bearing in mind, last week's taped Raw, they were still advertising it was the Royal Rumble.
Right.
They weren't advertising that we were going to get... And the funny thing is, so this is called Royal Rumble Raw, but there's not a Royal Rumble on it. So
well, which really makes no sense. Like, that was the first thing I was like, this is a dumb name for a Raw episode that doesn't feature any sort of Royal Rumble. Like, I'm fine with it because I'm not a huge Battle Royal fan, so I didn't want them to just, like, have a Battle Royal at the end. I kind of almost feared that that's what they would end up doing, is like, oh, and we're going to have our own little mini Royal Rumble for reasons, because we called it Royal Rumble Raw, but they didn't do that, so that was good. I guess they just showed, like, the 30-second clips and highlights and stuff, most of which were, you know, important moments from the Royal Rumble, and Jerry the King Lawler's entrance. For some reason, was one of the clips. It was like they ran out of important stuff, so they were like, oh, by the way, Jerry Lawler was in this for like 30 seconds.
He was, Sandra. He was in it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Speaking of Lawler, was he on commentary at the very beginning and then just left, or did I just imagine that he was there?
I don't really know.
Because I see that I have written down, welcome with Vince and JR and Lawler, with footage of the Royal Rumble.
But then we have Vince and Doc Hendricks.
Yeah.
Then we have, like, it's a very, I don't, because the thing is, we don't see the commentators, right?
No.
We don't see them. So, like, I assume, basically the commentary here was just done in post.
Well, it must have been.
Like, they weren't there, you know? So, but it's a weird show. We kick off with Austin and Vader, and you see Bret Hart pacing in the back, and like Vince is like, you know, Steve Austin versus Vader, Bret's in the back, raw.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's like my favorite thing, so I'm of course on board with all of that.
It's heel versus heel again with Stone Cold versus Vader.
They fucking love this thing, don't they? They love doing the heel versus heel thing.
I don't get it. Like,
I know.
I mean, WWE is basically incapable of creating baby faces. We know this, but. Like, can you just pretend? Like,
oh god.
I mean, not that I really want to see Vader versus Bart Gunn or something, but still.
I mean, no, who would want to see that? But so we kick off with Austin and Vader, heel versus heel again, and they're kind of just like, what I like about Steve Austin and Vader is they're both just kind of like fighters. So they do tend to make it look more like a fight.
Well, it's a tough man contest, Kenny. We're going to find out who's the toughest man.
Yes, we are.
As Vince tells us repeatedly throughout this match. Did you notice the ring post was on fire from the pyro?
I thought that was just like mad. I thought that was like Vader getting mad pyro.
No. Like, if someone goes over...
Oh, so that was just fire.
Yeah, like, I don't remember fire. If okay. It was Patterson or if it was someone near Patterson, but somebody like goes and has to blow out the ring post because it's on fire. Which I thought was incredible. I mean, there were some great fireworks at the beginning, to be fair. But apparently they got a little too close to the ring post and set it on fire. I was like, is Kane here? Oh no, wait, that's not for a while.
So we get Steve Austin Vader, and then in the end Steve Austin just decides to have a stunner on the referee. Because it's Steve Austin and
because
he doesn't need
And
then Vader and Austin are just brawling. The arena is, like, so dark that you can barely see what they're doing, and then they just, like, disappear into the night.
Yeah, they kind of do. Yeah, it was weird, because they're kind of roughing up the referee this entire match. Like, at one point, Vader throws the ref off the apron, and that's when Stone Cold hits a low blow or something, and, like, Austin hits the ref at some point, too, and he goes away, and then he just, like, straight up stunners him. So, the reffing, again, just like we had at the Royal Rumble, we had refs letting them get away with quite a bit. And, I mean, it's not like the ref let them get away with the DQ, necessarily. Like, they... Somebody rings the bell. Who knows who even rings the bell? If it was a count-out, if it was a DQ, no one knows. It just, it all devolved. But they're just not very kind to their poor referees.
They're not. It's pretty offensive, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The poor officials are supposed to be making their living.
No respect for the rules of the land. These lawless heathens.
These lawless heathens. Oh, God. We then get Savio Vega, who is now, like, fucking militant.
Yeah,
like, he's, like, got a big, like, jacket. He's got the Nation. And, like, Doc Hendricks is trying to sell to us why Savio Vega's in the Nation of Domination. And, like, the only thing I can come up with is that Savio Vega's in the Nation of Domination because Savio Vega is shit.
That would make sense. Well, I mean, yeah, if Farouk is just collecting shitty wrestlers for his stable because he has Crush already, so, like, also Savio Vega, why not?
I refuse to allow you to call Crush shit, Sondra.
He's so bad, Kenny.
He was Kona Crush, he crushed clowns, he was a Japanese sympathizer. I mean, you just don't get Crush. You just don't get it.
I don't get Crush at all. I will say that on the record. I don't get Crush. All I know is Crush has his, like, weepy...
It's legitimately more upset than you disliking The Undertaker. Like, I just can't handle it. So, anyway.
I've only seen Crush with his, like, wipe-off tattoo with his shitty heart punch. What am I supposed to connect to here?
That's why you're supposed to love him. He has a tattoo that comes off during a match.
Which is kind of delightful. It is kind of delightful.
He's essentially a heel stalker. But that's what he is.
Yeah, but I mean, the stalker was a thing of beauty, though, right? I mean, the stalker had the face paint with the mustache straight. I think that if I would have seen the stalker and his mustache would have also been painted as it was in most of his vignettes, I don't know if I would have loved the stalker quite as much. I still would have loved him. But the fact that he painted his face, but then had the mustache just unpainted and right out there and big and blonde, I think that's really kind of what clinched it with the stalker in me. It was true love. I'm still a little hurt.
We got Flash Funk versus Savio Vega, though. Savio Vega gets the pin. It was just really dull.
It was very dull. Savio Vega cut a promo at the beginning where he said he doesn't care what you fans think about it. And something like, it's going to be Power of Savio Vega. And Nation of Domination is going to rule the World Wrestling Federation or something. You know what we said about Savio Vega not being great at promos? Savio Vega's not very good at promos.
He's not. Savio Vega is bad at promos. He's bad at wrestling.
There is that. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily, like, bad at wrestling. He's just dull. And he's still wearing his same gear. Like, I mean, he has the big old coat and stuff when he comes out, but then he has just his regular standard Savio Vega gear where it's just like, Savio Vega across my back. I will say Duck Hendricks on this match actually made some good points on commentary. Like, pointing out that Savio was going for a chokehold instead of a cover and stuff. And I was like, am I actually liking something that Doc Hendricks is doing? I don't know how to feel about this.
Doc Hendricks, yeah, I mean, liking Doc Hendricks is a very weird way to feel.
Yeah. And I mean, and then he, you know, started doing some more promotional spots where he was like, well, blah, 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 get to the World Wrestling Federation. I was like, okay, good. I hate you again. It's fine. But.
Oh, Doc. So terrible.
like, but, I kind of love how shit he is, but, like, he's terrible.
Luckily, though, there's been somebody missing in our lives, Sondra.
There has been somebody missing in our lives, and he's back.
And luckily, Jim Ross brought him out. Psycho said he will be facing Shawn Michaels for the WWF Championship at Thursday. Raw, Thursday.
Yeah, we did get the first Thursday Raw Thursday ad, I think, before Flash Funk and Savio Vega. And holy 90s, and yes, they do say Thursday Raw Thursday an awful lot.
So, we get Sid. Sondra, I don't like taking over here. We got Sid. What did Sid have to say?
Okay, so I didn't transcribe the entire thing, but, you know, some of it is like, see, I've heard Sean say it himself. The relationship he and I have, it's a weird one. And then he starts talking about evil. He's like, evil is just that. It is evil. And sometimes we mistaken it for happiness. And then he talks about how, you know, maybe evil showed up at the Survivor Series. Maybe evil showed up at the Royal Rumble and, you know, goes on. And his whole point is basically that, you know, the World Wrestling Federation Championship brings out the evil in everyone, right? Like, it makes them do things that they wouldn't necessarily do or whatever. And he's like, but when this roller coaster ride is over, Sean, when it is over, it's come up and it's come down and this ride comes to a halt and the smoke clears. I will be standing the man. I will be standing the man and the master and the ruler of the world.
I love him so, so much.
He's just so great. His relationship with Shawn Michaels is a roller coaster. And not only is it a roller coaster, but like he basically describes to us how a roller coaster works so that we can fully understand the ups and downs of his relationship with Shawn Michaels and also pontificates on the nature of evil. I love Psycho Sid.
I've decided when later on this year we lose Sid for good, which does happen. So let's not.
That's going to happen.
We are not going to kid ourselves here. That's not happening, right?
No, I know that's happening.
But what we are going to do, what we're absolutely going to do, is hold a special podcast in memoriam of Sid's WWF career. Where we're going to go over all our favorite promos. And then what we'll do is, if we're still retroing it up in a couple of years and there's Inside the Ropes headquarters, what we might do is we might have to delve into Nitro in 1999 when Sid turns up as the Millennium Man.
The Millennium Man? That sounds amazing.
Where Sid would... I need to explain this to you very quickly. So Sid would have a placard of his winning streak, right?
Okay.
And it would go to an ad break... And then there'd be more on it when it comes back from the ad.
What? Like he had multiple matches during the ad?
The next week, there would be a lesser number on it. It's classic Sid.
That sounds like the most Psycho Sid thing in all of the world. And I kind of want to see it. That sounds amazing.
So Sid is prepping up for the match with Shawn Michaels at Thursday, Raw Thursday. Then we get the tag team titles. Finally, Doug Furness and Phil LaFondre getting the title shot against British Heart and Owen Bulldog. Owen Hart and British Bulldog. These teams have like really good chemistry together.
Yeah,
like,
they do. Their matches are really good.
Like, they have really good matches. And then, like, the finish comes at the end because, like, Furness is going to go for the roll-up to get the win. There's various tips where they're going to win the titles, essentially. Like, they are... going to win the championships.
Well, they
and
get
then
multiple
finally,
visual pins. Like, at one point, Doug Furness has Bulldog pinned, but the referee is, you know, distracted by Owen, or, you know, he has
exactly.
Owen pinned.
And there's, like, there's the tornado DDT, but Owen's got the foot in the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
There's fucking... Everything's going on.
And I mean,
then,
that's about... Hebner actually counts three, and then the bell actually rings, too. But then
which you don't
off.
Ever see.
Yeah, like, it felt really awkward, but also kind of, it was kind of neat just because it was like, oh, that could happen, I guess. It wasn't, like, polished.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought this was my favorite Furness and LaFon performance in WWF so far. Mainly because it kind of meant something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the match kind of felt like it meant something, and the titles were on the line, and all that sort of stuff. And in the end, Owen Hart would claim a knee injury and get counted out.
Well, and
so,
it's even more dissension between the two of them because, like, Owen was supposed to whip LaFon over Bulldog and Bulldog was supposed to throw LaFon out of the ring or whatever, but then LaFon reverses it and Owen gets thrown out of the ring and then he's like, ow, my knee, ow, my knee. I kind of wish commentary hadn't, like, started talking about disqualification and, oh, yeah, you know, if you get disqualified, then the title isn't going to change hands. They start talking about that, like, 2 or 3 minutes before the finish, which is an intentional count-out, which is exactly what they do. It's like, you kind of signaled that one, guys.
Yeah, that was not good. But what it does do is it gives us a good reason to get a pay-per-view tag team title match, which we're going to get. And like you say, like, it becomes this point now where, like, British Bulldog is essentially a babyface. You know, people love him, and he's, like, he's pretty much good, but the Owen Hart is, like, still a sneaky little fuck, and he's just doing everything he can to avoid... losing these tag team titles. So the story is foolproof, I think.
It is. I think the only problem with it is that Bulldog is essentially a babyface. I mean, like, when he's flexing for the crowd and everything and ignoring Owen, so, you know, Owen gets annoyed, like, hey, I'm trying to tag you and you're over here flexing, and they get into a little spat about that because they're fighting about everything. I mean, even before the match, there's an interview segment with them where Vince and JR are basically, like, stirring the pot, being like, hey, remember when Owen threw you out of the Royal Rumble? And then they, like, fight about whether it was an accident or not, and Bulldog calls Owen an idiot, and he's like, don't call me an idiot, da-da-da. And then, you know, Bulldog is flexing at one point in the match, the crowd's cheering for him and booing Owen, and everyone's really invested in Bulldog versus Owen, so I feel like Furnace and LaFon just sort of get lost in the shuffle a little bit. They're really good, but they're just bland as bland can be. They don't really have character. Like, all we really know about them is, like, their names are Furnace and LaFon. We know LaFon lives in Canada, he's French, and Doug Furnace has the flu tonight, which is unfortunate. But how much do we really know about them, like, character-wise? Not a lot. So in this era of Raw especially, it seems like they could do a little bit more to make Furnace and LaFon more interesting.
I think so. I think the other thing is, it almost strikes me that Vince, this feels like a classic Vince project where he's been told to push these guys. And he's like, okay. And, like, he's just not fully into it, you know? But, you know, we'll see where it goes. We get another sort of, like, 10 seconds of clips from the Royal Rumble where we see Ahmed Johnson eliminate Farouk. Then we get a backstage promo from Ahmed where he, like, talks and, like, he talks.
He does. He talks. You know what he says? Because this was great. You know, he's like, this is just the beginning. You ain't seen nothing yet. And, you know, that's fine. And then JR asks him something. And he's like, you know what, JR? I got something in store for everybody, including you and Vince. Because guess what? I don't take my Prozac anymore. And when I get off Prozac, brother, you don't know what might happen to you. Okay. All right. Like, so you are on psychiatric medication, or should be on psychiatric medication, but are no longer on that psychiatric medication? Is this because you lost all your money, your home, and your girlfriend with your kidney injury? Is this more of that story? Like, you couldn't afford your insurance, so you're off your antidepressants? I mean, Ahmed Johnson has taken kind of a dark turn here in this promo.
I mean, Ahmed Johnson is like, he's not quite said. Like, he's not quite there, but
No.
He's getting there. He's getting there. Like, he's mental enough that I enjoy him.
Yes. I mean, Sid is just a whole level unto himself, so...
That's true. I think of everybody in 1996, 1997 time of WWF, putting Goldust and Crush together is just your aesthetic dream.
Yeah, so 100%. But you missed Undertaker grabbing Ahmed's throat during the end of the interview.
This is the problem when I watch this show drunk. And then I write certain things down, and then I don't write other things down. Yes, Undertaker does grab Ahmed because Undertaker is still enraged about the fact that he lost the Royal Rumble. And obviously they've got to team together in the main event against Farouk and Mankind.
It's kind of funny, in the match before this, they were, like, promoting what was going to come up, right? Like, Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Mark Miro for the Intercontinental Championship again. And so they're talking about that, and, you know, it's during a tag title match. So they're talking about a tag title match, so yes, speaking of championships. And then they talk about Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Mark Miro, so yeah, that involves a championship. And then Vince goes, speaking of championships, we're going to get Ahmed Johnson and Undertaker versus Mankind and Farouk. Speaking of championships, none of them are the champion, nor are they going to be. What are you even talking about?
I love Vince so much. He's just like, ridiculous. Vince is one of those people, like, if he did not own the company, there's no way he'd ever get on commentary.
Ever.
But yeah, so I do think, though, Undertaker and Ahmed kind of having that moment was a nice setup for the main event of, like, you know, can they coexist?
Well, and it was an interesting way to not get Ahmed to interfere versus in Crush versus Goldust as well, because Ahmed Johnson was raging and was like, I'm going to go out and beat up the entire Nation of Domination. So he wants to beat up Crush, right? And the Undertaker's whole point was, if you go now, you go alone. If you wait, we'll bury them together. And he puts his hand over the camera lens and, like, they're going to have a moment and the camera can't see it, which was actually pretty cool. So I said a nice thing about The Undertaker.
Jesus Christ.
See?
I wasn't prepared for that one, folks.
I know. And he spoke at a reasonable pace, too. It wasn't like, I need to have all the dark and smoke and pyro and stuff just for this one moment. It was like, no, dude, don't go out there and interfere because this could fuck with our match later and I want to win. It made sense.
So we got Crush versus Goldust. It was terrible, but we did get Triple H coming out trying to distract Goldust so Crush could kind of lay into him. And so what I feel bad about here, so Triple H comes out to help distract and then Goldust manages to kind of get the comeback. And then Savio Vega comes out to distract and then we get the heart punch. And Crush wins. Now, there's no reaction from the crowd. But B, where are the baby faces?
Yeah, well, if we've learned anything about WWE in current day, and, you know, seems maybe WWF back in the day, baby faces are terrible friends.
Yeah, horrible. Horrible people.
Like, shouldn't Mark Miro be helping Goldust?
Well, given that he's facing Triple H later on, and...
And they bond over Triple H trying to, like, pump their wives.
God, I guess so. I guess so.
I'm saying it's a common thread. But, like...
The good thing is the Nation of Domination are a cohesive unit, and I like that. I like that they are nothing if not consistent. You know, they are constantly helping each other to win matches, and, like, they're cheating. Because heels cheat, funnily enough. Not that you'd know that today, when all the heels are fucking fan favorites.
I know. There are a few heels who still cheat.
Just not Kevin Owens.
No, not Kevin Owens. But, I mean, yeah, Savio Vega doing a spinning heel kick to Goldust was fine. My question about Crush, he's doing a lot of punching in this match because it doesn't seem he knows how to do anything else. Why doesn't he just punch Goldust's heart sooner? And then it would be over with.
I mean, I can't really defend the strategy. He should have done it quicker. But the thing that I love, for everyone who is listening to this show and you have you watched this back in the day as well, you will understand the glory of the promo for the return of the Blackjacks.
There was a black glove and a black claw, and the Blackjacks will ride again hard and fast. And then they pour water on the fire.
I don't mean this in a patronizing way. Do you know who the Blackjacks are? Either old ones or new ones? There's no right or wrong answer. I'm just asking.
Is Blackjack Mulligan one of them?
Yeah, so Blackjack Mulligan, Blackjack Lanza. Okay. So Jack Lanza, who's like, you know, Jack Lanza is like the bald agent guy with a really black mustache. I'll send you a picture of him. And then Blackjack Mulligan, obviously, is the grandfather of Bray Wyatt and Dallas.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you who the two new ones are, but fuck me, it is glorious.
Okay, because I don't know. Like, I feel like I should know, but I don't know.
Don't tell Sondra, Dave Buxton. Do not tell Sondra. I know you and your spoilery ways. None of it.
How long am I going to have to wait to find out who the Blackjacks are?
Like 2 weeks. It's going to be so good because they're so terrible. Anyway.
Someone that I'm going to recognize? Or is it just going to be like new Blackjacks?
One of them is a former love. And one of them is someone currently on television.
Okay.
So, the Blackjacks will return. Younger and shitter. Vince McMahon comes out for an interview with the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, Sondra. The World Wrestling Federation champion. The man who came from the agony of the defeat in his mentor, and now he's back and he's on top and he won in Texas in front of a sold out crowd in a stadium. Don't you just love him?
Yeah, no, all of the drugs with Shawn Michaels, just all the drugs. And
he compares himself here to Muhammad Ali.
Yep.
Shawn Michaels, Muhammad Ali.
Yep. He absolutely says that, which is why when Bret Hart comes out later and is like, Muhammad Ali, I don't think so. Dennis Rodman, maybe. I laughed pretty hard.
Yeah, so Bret Hart ends up coming out and interrupting, because Bret Hart, like us, can't really stomach what's going on. And,
because Sean's all like, Sid, you know, like, he thinks the belt used to represent everything good, but maybe Sid is exactly right, and this belt has spread out the worst in him, and or the worst in some of the WWF superstars, and he's one of them. And at this point, Vince just gives him this cheesy, loving grin, like, Shawn Michaels is the best thing in the world, and he has just done this amazing feat by telling a joke. And Vince, you can just feel the love from Vince to Shawn, and I'm like, I don't understand why you like this man so much.
I still don't understand it, and it's 20 years later.
I also didn't understand, he talks about, like, the partisan crowd, right? He's like, you know, this partisan crowd, you know, I had my chance in San Antonio, and this crowd's gonna boo me. The crowd was cheering him when he came out. Like, Shawn Michaels, effectively, in this promo, got the crowd to boo him. Which, if you're a heel, is great.
Well, I think they knew that as soon as Bret came out, he was fucked.
Right.
You know, so they were just kind of like, okay, that's fine, we'll just make Shawn play the heelish kind of... And he does it so well, you know?
Well... But almost like it comes naturally.
But Bret comes out, and then Bret ends up calling Shawn a degenerate.
Mm-hmm. Well, because Shawn had said that, like, what, the week before or 2 weeks before? Whenever that was, he did call himself a degenerate, so we're going with that again now.
And this is, like, at this point in time, there is no plans for Degeneration X.
Really?
Nothing. There wasn't even a thought in the mind.
Wow.
So I figured that coming.
That was maybe a thing, but...
Nope.
I mean, I guess Hunter Hearst Helmsley's really not showing any signs of being a degenerate at this point either. He's just still frilly and trying to rape women.
What I liked about this is, you know, you've got Shawn out there. Shawn Michaels is disintegrating before our eyes. You know, even the championship. Like, I actually do think there's a bit of genius storytelling in here through his drug use, which is that he... is falling apart. You know, he's like, he can't handle the pressure. He doesn't like the fact that people don't like him. He is bothered by the fact that Bret Hart is so holier than thou, because Bret Hart is very much like, you know, I'm better than you, you're just a fucking punk, etc. And Shawn is losing it. So we've got Bret out kind of, you know, poking Shawn and calling him a degenerate. Then we've got Steve Austin running out to attack Bret. Sid comes out to stare down Shawn. And
he says stare down. That undersells what Sid does here. Sid points angrily at himself and at Shawn and at himself and at Shawn, and then makes all of his Sid faces, and it's glorious. And we don't see it for nearly long enough.
It's worth watching again, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But then here's what I don't get. We go to a break, and then we come back with Shawn laying the belt down at Bret's feet, and then Bret puts his foot on it to stop Shawn from, like, picking it up. And then he tosses the belt to Shawn and flips him off. It was the most glorious thing I've ever seen in my life. Bret Hart is such a dick, and I love it so, so much.
Yeah, no, this was really good. There was absolute tension.
He's just like, fuck it, I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. Fuck you, stupid piece of shit. Middle finger, throws the belt at him. Great, loved it.
I don't understand why at the ad break, like, they escort Psycho Sid and Steve Austin, right? So, like, security can manage to get Psycho Sid out of the arena, but not Bret and Shawn?
Well, actually, the dark match of this house show, the main event was for the WWF Championship, a triple threat match with Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, and Sid.
Oh my gosh, why was that the dark match and not on this show? Do you know how much more interesting this show would have been? If that would have actually been on here,
I know.
Crush versus Goldust. Ugh.
If you want something interesting, Sondra, Tiger Ali Singh has signed his World Wrestling Federation contract.
Oh boy, am I excited! See, this was my question, because didn't we have a press conference that interrupted Raw a while back about Tiger Ali Singh? So apparently, they had a whole press conference to announce that he was going to sign, and then they have a contract signing as well.
Because this is his hometown. So he's got to sign it in his hometown in the Sky Dome. Imagine the story if he signed the contract in the Sky Dome. And then when they go back there for WrestleMania 18 in 2002, he can main event and beat Jericho. Unless somebody shags somebody and then they get it instead. Oh, Okay, anyway.
Now I'm really curious to know what that was all about, but like...
No, well, Triple H beat Jericho in 2002's WrestleMania. It was just a
joke. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Anyway, but Tiger Ali Singh, he's signed. That's good.
What a mullet.
What a something. There's various ways.
Like,
I feel like that's with Tiger Ali Singh, you could just put what a blank and have various people put in words and most of them would be sensible.
Yeah, that's real true. I mean, and he gives, you know, the blandest interview since Rocky Maivia, and Vince is like, oh my goodness, what an interview. Okay, Vince. I'm seriously getting Rocky Maivia vibes from Tiger Ali Singh, the way they're like, this guy, he's the coolest, or something. I don't feel like he's going to rise to
the
level.
Oh, he's not cool in any way, shape, or form, son. He's a fucking Indian mullet man.
He is an Indian mullet man. That is accurate. Well, I mean, he's Canadian.
Yeah, kinda. We get the Intercontinental Championship match, though. Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Mark
Isn't Meadow. He Canadian if this is his hometown?
What's in Toronto?
Right. I said he's Canadian. You're like, kinda.
Of Indian descent.
Well, yeah.
I mean, of all the things that we can argue about and spend time on, are we really going to spend on this?
Is he basically the original Jinder Mahal?
Yes.
Okay.
So we get the rematch, Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Mark Merrill. Really hard to not say Rocky Maivia. and there's this great bit where, you know, this is essentially kind of like, the feud's over, but let's give Triple H a win. And there's all these things happening, and like, throughout the show, what they're promoting here, because... You probably are not aware of this, but like a lot of things that WCW would do on Nitro is they would promote a match for like 2 hours and then the match would like have, like it wouldn't happen or like people would run in or there'd be a schmoz. So it was like a kind of bait and switch thing that would happen quite a lot. And JR and Vince are like, you know, there's going to be no bait and switch tonight. There's going to be no bait and switch tonight. There's going to be no bait and switch tonight. And in my head, I'm going, this is called Royal Rumble Raw.
Oh, you
How many
an
Royal Rumbles
have
we
point. Seen? Yeah, that's real true. But, I mean, I guess there are no managers allowed in this match, which is supposed to make it more exciting or something. Because apparently in a match with all men, Mr. Hughes got involved or something. They can't decide whether Mr. Hughes is a butler or a bodyguard. Like, Vince calls him a butler at the beginning, and Jared calls him a bodyguard, like, later in the show.
Just so you know, Mr. Hughes has 2 more weeks left on TV. So, don't get attached.
I am not attached to Mr. Hughes in any way, shape, or form. I actually have written down, who could possibly care? So, apparently also yesterday on Superstar, Sable kicked The Undertaker, and it is hilarious, because Sable cannot move, right? Like, she's just really terrible at moving like a human.
I almost, when I saw this, I almost thought, why did Paul Heyman not come out and say that the reason that Brock Lesnar was ending the Undertaker streak was to get back at him for Sable from 1997?
Wouldn't that have been amazing?
Do you remember when you kicked my wife? You remember my wife had to kick you because you were being an evil man? Well, now she's going to make me end your streak, mate. There you go. Fuck you.
It all comes full circle. But, like, it's really funny because she can barely move. Like, she needs to be oiled or something. Like, not in a sexy way, but, like, the Tin Man when his joints are all rusted. And...
I love that there's, like, there are 2 options for oil with Sable. Tin Man. Today I choose Tin Man.
Yeah, exactly. But, like... They say, listen to this kick, and there's this big thwack noise when she kicks them. And you can
Which
tell
is just her. It's just literally the noise of her rubber suit.
Well, it almost sounded like they padded the Undertaker in a vest or something that would make a noise, like make a sound effect. It's clearly added. Like, it's not the noise of her kicking him. Like, it's way too loud for that.
It's insane. So obviously in the end, Hunter Hearst Helmsley does defeat Mark Merrow. We always knew it was going to happen. And you know what? Their matches aren't bad. I think the problem is just that Merrow's kind of really cooled off as a character because he just doesn't really do much anymore. He's on Superstars a lot. Sable stamped out shine him. So, you know, there wasn't really much there.
Yeah, their matches are fine. It also seems like we've seen it a lot of times. I mean, actually, Mr. Sonder came into the room last night as I was watching it, and he was like, oh, who's that wrestling Triple H? Because Miro was down in the corner. You couldn't see him very well. I was like, oh, it's Mark Miro. He goes, aren't those two always wrestling each other? I feel like every time I come into the room, Hunter Hearst Helmsley is wrestling Mark Miro. And I was like, yeah, accurate. That's fair.
I love when Mr. Saundra comes in and just, like, throws shade.
That happens most of my life. Yeah. that makes it sound like I'm in a really unhappy marriage. She's mostly just throwing shade at the television and what I'm watching. But there's an actual line of commentary here, Kenny, which mm-hmm. I think was just incredible.
Okay.
Because Vince McMahon says, you know, Helmsley backpedaling to the corner there, much like Robin Hood might do. And then JR goes, I don't think so. Like, he's just grumbling. And Vince goes, why not Robin Hood? And then JR says, Robin Hood's arms are not very big. And then Vince says, well, no, not compared to La Femme Nikita.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
It made me laugh so hard. Not compared to La Femme Nikita. That. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I had the chance to interview the lovely Rita Wilson. And something, something, she certainly has more definition than Robin Hood.
I am so going to go back and rewatch that match just to hear that commentary because I can't believe I missed it.
It's so
My
good.
My God.
It's so good.
Jesus Christ. that's commentary. And also, do you know what I'm saying this the other day? I'm saying this on air because it's just like, why not? Like, see before you started listening to Inside the Ropes. Because here, cause I don't think people know this story, do they? Like,
sorry about me.
One of the reasons it's so, yeah, one of the reasons that Sandra is a host at Inside the Ropes is because she stumbled upon us as a listener.
Uh-huh.
Like,
I
years
listened
ago.
For,
and then,
yeah, like about, what, 2 years or so before I started being involved on air.
Yeah, because we used to do like a lot of Facebook interaction.
It was when the show used to be live, so like we would.
Yeah, we used to do it live every Thursday night. And like Sonny would post these comments, but they were like essays, and yeah. They were like really good points, but they were so long. And then obviously we were like, we weren't doing an NXT show. Well, what was Sandra and Bob? And then that was hit. But what I was going to say is, what did, like, I wonder, like, is Mr. Sandra kind of like, you know, I used to get a lot of time with you, and Inside the Ropes is basically your marriage now. I'm like the secondary marriage.
Kind of is. He does sometimes make comments about, like, because I get home from work a lot of the time. And I need to watch wrestling, like, immediately. And sometimes it's, like, stuff that I want to watch, like, if NXTs are on or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to watch NXT, but, like, I don't have to kick him out of the room for that. But if it's a Tuesday night, I get home, like, I have to watch SmackDown, because we're recording about it the next day. Or, you know, often, yeah, like, last night I had to watch Retro Raw, so I had to make him turn off whatever Hannibal movie he was watching. And so he's sometimes just like, I don't even expect to get the TV anymore when you're home, because you're just always watching wrestling. I'm like, yeah, that's true. The thing is, though, it is his fault. All of this is Mr. Saundra's fault, because I didn't know what wrestling was before we got married. And then he was the one who had a few wrestling DVDs from when he used to watch in college, and he was the one who turned on Raw on some random night. I saw Jack Swagger in the ring with awards, and I was like, intriguing. What is this shit that you're watching? This wrestling shit that's horrible and stupid, and I want to watch more of it. And, you know, look where we are now.
Can you imagine, though, and I say this to all the listeners as well, not just us. Can you imagine, like, a day where, like, the Royal Rumble or, like, a TakeOver or a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam are on, and we're not, like, interacting with everybody and enjoying it the way we do?
It's so weird to think about. Like, it's so weird because, like, early 2010, I didn't even know who John Cena was. And look at my life. What has happened? Like,
you're welcome, Sandra.
I love it. I'm not complaining. I love it.
It's amazing. So we got this match. You know, it was what it was. Hunter Helmsley got a victory. It was fine.
Hunter used brass knuckles, actually, because they were in his boot.
So we get the non-bait-and-switch main event, right? Because there's not a bait-and-switch here,
there's
folks.
There's no
bait-and-switch,
unless you were expecting to see a Royal Rumble.
Now, bear in mind, on WCW, like, the bait-and-switch that they would pull is, like, Hogan defending the title against Savage, or Luger, or Sting, or whatever. And here, the one that they're like, we are not going to bait-and-switch this, is, like, Farouk and Mankind against Ahmed Johnson, The Undertaker. It's not exactly Shawn versus Sid versus Bret. Like,
no, it's sure not.
You've got, like, one main eventer in The Undertaker. You've got Mankind, who used to be a main eventer, who they've just kind of not done anything with. And then you've got this mid-card feud. That's good, but, like, it's one of those things. I guess I'm just kind of struggling to understand why this tag team match in particular would be the one that you're like, I need to see this.
I don't know why they didn't put, like, the tag titles on the main event or something like that. Or the Intercontinental Championship. Like, you had two title matches, and this is your main event?
Well, because the thing is, like, Ahmed and Farouk make sense, because they're still feuding. Mankind Undertaker's done.
Yeah.
Like, it's done, and they're still here. Anyway, so we get the match. Big brawl to start it off. Ahmed hits. I love Ahmed Johnson's spinebuster, because, like, he's going to murder the person, so.
It does look like he's going to murder the person, 100%.
Does the spinebuster and Farouk, Undertaker, Mankind are just brawling down the aisle.
There is something really hilarious about Paul Bearer entering to the Nation of Domination theme. I did enjoy that quite a bit, as he's mugging to the camera.
I don't know if I'll ever see anything funnier than Paul Bearer jumping off of the apron to hit Undertaker with the iron and then falling like a big sack of shit onto the ground. And then him and Vader cackling away to the back, just... It's such an image, such a powerful image. But Farouk's kind of getting the upper hand here in the match later on, and then Undertaker comes in, kind of breaks it up, and it's all kind of going on, and then the Nation of Domination comes out, obviously, and the Nation of Domination attacks Ahmed Johnson. He obviously chases them away with his 2x4, and then we've got Farouk and Mankind double-teaming the Undertaker. Ahmed Johnson makes the save, and... We end up with it's run-in central.
There's action all over the Toronto Sky Dome.
We've got, like, Mankind Undertaker, like, trying to finish the match on their own. Vader runs in. He, like, splashes the Undertaker. He tries to hit Undertaker with a chair, but he ends up hitting Mankind.
A non-padded chair. I think this is the first non-padded chair we've seen in a while.
Yeah. And then and Undertaker, who, like... Undertaker, like, in matches, for the most part, like, you know, one thing we can say about him is he does put a wee shift in, usually.
He does.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he does put a shift in, and you can usually see him kind of a bit knackered. He looks like he had done a very, very light treadmill jog here. And then he was just like, tombstone, done.
Yep.
And, like, he was like, there was, if you can find a bead of sweat on the Undertaker's head here, I will be amazed. Like, he was just, like, easiest night on the planet for him. So again, like, the whole thing is we've got this big tag match, which is basically the heat of the tag match is Ahmed and Farouk, and then we end with Undertaker just beating Mankind again.
Yep.
Ah!
Because, man, Farouk and Ahmed kind of, you know, they're brawling or whatever. My question about this match, was this a tornado tag match, or were there supposed to be tags? Because I know it's no disqualification, I understand that, but still, in a no disqualification tag match, you should have... You have to still tag in and out, right? Because then there are, like, legal men, and, like, only the legal man can pin the other legal man. In this match, it really didn't seem like that was the case. It really just seemed like everybody was fighting everybody at all times. Which is fine, but they didn't announce it as such.
There's been tough man contests, there's been... they don't explain things, essentially.
No. And I'm a stickler for rules, right? Like, I like to know the rules of the wrestling match because that helps me enjoy it. Because then if they're breaking the rules, then I can be like, hey, they're breaking the rules. And that adds some psychology to this match. And this, like, the brawling was fine. It wasn't super exciting. It got more exciting toward the end, like when Vader runs out and, you know, all this other stuff starts going on, like the Nation of Domination and blah, blah, blah. But... So it actually was kind of exciting in the end, but I was just kind of like, I don't know what's happening, though, was my problem.
And I understand why you would feel that way. I think that the weird thing is, like, it was fine in the end, but, like, so my issue with it, though, was Vader and Undertaker in the feud, which is fine, and they're kind of further in that, and Ahmed and Farouk in the feud and they're further in that, but then you've kind of got Mick Foley, who's just kind of doing nothing,
yeah.
You know? And that's really my only issue with it, because he had such a great 1996, and, you know, they've moved Undertaker on, but, like, it's almost like the Hogan effect of, like, Hogan used to feud with somebody who would really bring out the best in him and then beat him, and then the guys would struggle to find something else to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that's where Mick Foley's kind of at now, because the thing with him and Vader having the tension there... It's not really that interesting at the moment.
Well, they're just... there's not that much tension between Mankind and Vader, really. They're an alliance, if anything, because Paul Bearer manages them both, and so they're, you know, friends. Well, I mean, they're not, like, friends, but they tagged together, and it was fine, I guess.
Yeah, but I did think the show overall was a nice change in terms of, like, the way it looked, and, you know, they were able to put some decent stuff on it. You know, the tag title match was good, and the IC title match was okay. I mean, it was a good match, but Mark Mero's not really got much steam on him.
I feel kind of bad for Mark Mero, because he's just kind of nothing.
Yeah, I'm actually going to give this one a thumbs up, purely because there was a Sid promo, there was a Sean promo, which turned into Brett flipping him off and throwing the belt at him. Good tag title match. Funny, if not pointless, main event. That was enough to keep me entertained for the hour and a half that it was.
I'm going to go thumbs in the middle.
Ah!
Because it's not like it was bad.
Right, okay.
But it didn't help that I really wanted to be watching something else. But
well, you need to time this better, Sandra. You can't be watching it against Shikara.
Yeah, I know.
You know how much you love Shikara.
I really do, a lot. And a lot. So that didn't help. But it's not like there was bad or anything, but it also was kind of boring in a lot of spots. Like, even the tag match was good, but I feel like with Furnace and LaFawn having no character whatsoever and everyone being so into the Bulldog versus Owen thing, they just kind of get lost. So I think that hurts the match for me, and it hurts the overall story. And so, like, the Sid promo was good, so, like, maybe middling to up, but it just, there wasn't a lot accomplished, I guess. And also, it felt like it took forever to watch, because it's twice as long as I'm used to, and I'm not used to that yet.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to finish this show off by first of all saying, we're fucking bringing Goldberg to the UK, motherfuckers.
Yeah, we are. You are. I'm not.
Well, to be determined, we might fly you over. It's going to be really exciting. I don't even think you're lying.
I'm not, actually.
So, Kenny, if I was to pay this towards the flight, would you fancy paying this? Okay. Basically, we are going to do this Goldberg tour. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is a current WWE headlining act. Don't ask me how we've done it. I'm not going to tell you. But, like, it's going to be so much fun. We're going to make Goldberg the best experience so far. One of our listeners, who's just a new $50 Patreon pledger, Alejandro Montero, I think his surname is, he's flying over from Barcelona for it, like, to London.
Oh, is he really? That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's going to be really big, really good. The biggest one we've done so far. We've also got Stu Bennett, a.k.a. Wade Barrett, coming up at the end of April. Tickets for Wade Barrett and Goldberg both go on sale this coming Friday, the 10th of February. The Goldberg tickets go on sale at noon, and the Wade Barrett tickets go on sale at 1 p.m. Ticket prices and package info will be available on our social media channels tomorrow, Monday, the 6th of February at 10 a.m., if you want to go VIP for Goldberg, what I would say is, I know that people sometimes have the tendency to say, oh, it's really expensive to go VIP. It is, but, like, it's a current WWE headlining act. And if you don't get the VIP tickets now, like, they are going to sell out without question.
Yeah.
We've never had demand so high for people wanting to meet somebody before. And he probably will not do this again. He's not been in the UK in 17 years. And, you know, it's taken a long time for us to get this to happen. He wants to do it the right way. I'm glad he's doing it with us. And it's going to be really exciting. So we hope to see you there. And Mark Tucker also tweeted me and had something he said. Because recently, I'm just going to say it. I also obviously do a podcast called Wrestle Culture with the Adams over at What Culture. And we were told by the bosses to start doing a format to it.
I did listen to your first show with the format.
To which I thought, okay, let's do a format then. to which Mark Tucker has responded saying, Wrestle Culture is the 5-minute quickie compared to the full night session of whips and cuffs with Inside the Ropes. There's a time and a place for quickies. We all know what we'd prefer on a weekly basis. So has a better analogy ever been spoken for a podcast?
That's amazing. I love it.
Why not? If people want more of our stuff, Sandra, where could they go to get like more content if they want?
They could go to patreon.com/ inside the ropes. I can't talk this morning. Tons of bonus content there if you want to hear us talk about the actual Royal Rumble, not just Royal Rumble Raw, where we got 30-second clips. Like, we actually talked about the full Royal Rumble of 1997 over on Patreon. We also talk about In Your House, Buried Alive, In Your House, It's Time, Survivor Series. So all the pay-per-views that we've been doing since we started Retro Raw are up on Patreon. Also, current pay-per-view reviews that are not the big four. We're putting the big four, you know, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, SummerSlam, and WrestleMania, obviously. We're putting those out for free. The rest of them go up on Patreon. We're starting to put up classic content, so if you want to hear, you know, old school Robert and Kenny, where it all began, there are two episodes posted now, another one's going up later today, so we're posting those exactly 5 years after the original air date, because Inside the Ropes has been around for 5 years, you guys, like, it's been around for a while. This has been, like, such a part of Kenny's life for so long. Can you even remember a time before Inside the Ropes?
It's very difficult. And I was away at a log cabin this past weekend, and the first thing I decided to do when I had some time off was something I wanted to do for a long time, which is I wanted to start writing, because I want to try and write down all my stories and my kind of experiences that I've had with wrestling. So it'd be quite fun that one day there might be a way that people want to read that. So I thought, I'll just start doing it. And I was trying to think of things pre-Inside the Ropes, and I was like, oh, this is like, I need to go into the old mental palace and find it. So I'm still trying. But yeah, no, it's 5 years is a long time, but it's fun. And also, our Royal Rumble podcast, we just did, over 4,000 of you have listened to it. One of our highest rated episodes we've had in a long time. Very happy about that. Thank you very much for checking it out. A lot of people like that we all had different opinions and we were able to verbalize them nicely. So yeah.
I was pretty proud of that one, to be honest. Like, I mean, it's long, but I think there was some really good discussion in there, and it was...
Yeah, I don't get dragged at all. I think it was like properly. It was exactly what it needed to be.
Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do the Royal Rumble justice, because there was a lot that went on in there. So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
And if you go Patreon, you know, you're going to get two reviews that are going to be exclusive to Patreon is David and I talking Fastlane, Sandra and I talking Elimination Chamber. They're only going to be available on Patreon. So get over there and sign up if you feel so inclined.
And thank you to everyone who has already done that. Your support really does mean a lot. I'm not just saying it because I have to say it. Like, it actually is overwhelming how many of you are willing to support us and have gotten in touch about the content and been so nice about it. We have the coolest listeners in the world, basically, is what I'm saying.
We do. And the thing is, like, pledging means that people like Sandra and David can take time out of their regular working lives to podcast, because we do more now. You know, they can take time out because we can make that happen through our pledges. We can get better equipment. We can do different things. We can make sure that when Goldberg comes over, we have pyro. We can do various things. That costs money. Although Sandra's wage is higher than Goldberg's pyro, which is she demands a high premium to podcast about wrestling.
Oh yes. I'm just swimming in money now. Yep. Because this wrestling podcasting is just so lucrative.
It's so lucrative. Anyway, Twitter, where can people find us?
Follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Bye.